following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang. It is that time of the week again. It's time for the True Wealth Radio Show on this, the greatest Tuesday you've had all week. And I'm your host, Dave Little John, in studio with me today.
Matt Dixon.
And Matt?
Yep.
I'm kind of like a little, I'm going to say almost greedy. It's like I get you to myself today so we can really dig into some stuff that's fun.
Yes.
Sometimes we have guests, but today it's just the two of us. And this is a great chance to get into, I don't think it's weeds. Even though it may, some people may say, like, oh, you're going to get in the weeds today. I don't think that's what this is. But I think it's a little bit of insight into some of the things that people think they know that maybe they don't really know.
Yeah, that's a good way to say that politely.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, you thought you knew. Okay. And by the way, I mean, we all, there are times I have to look at this and go, I thought I knew.
Yeah.
There's, and sometimes it's not even knowable. And we have to look and figure out how to do that. But the title of today's show is The Market's Imaginary Rules. Matt,
yeah.
Can you get, like, when we came up with this, give our listeners, like, set the table a little bit. What are some of the things that led us to want to do this show today?
Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot going on in the markets right now that seems kind of crazy, right? We've had multiple years of the market running up, and lately we've been seeing, you know, some of the chip stocks kind of moving lower, and you know, so we've seen the index kind of pull back, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, a lot of positions have been going up. And so we started looking into some of the things that investors as a whole kind of tend to hold true in moments where those things that they thought were real might not actually be real. So it's like, did you accept something as a fact that is a fallacy?
Yeah, it's kind of, I also like the idea, let's try to pull the curtain back, or maybe we expand your understanding about something.
Mm-hmm.
They all have a similar effect. It is, I thought I knew something, and it turns out there was more to it, and now that I have the more to it, it expands my understanding, or it changes it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? This, by the way, is also, if you're saying it like in a really fancy, snooty way, we'd say, we're going to combat the Dunning-Kruger effect.
There you go.
Okay.
I like that.
The Dunning-Kruger effect is the idea that the less somebody knows about something, the more confident they often tend to be. So the really confident buffoon is like, oh, I'll tell you what it's all about. And they don't really know anything. And they oversimplify it. And they kind of just start throwing around. Yeah. And there's this confidence. Now, sometimes it's a joke. Right. You know, I mean, I have the running joke with a lot of people. You know, if they just let us be king for a day, we'd solve all the problems. Probably not. But it's fun to joke, right? But there are some people that genuinely believe, like, oh, I know stuff. And then you get into it, you're like, you don't know anything, right? Like, you know, oh, all you have to do is this. It's like, if you did that, you break all kinds of stuff and you create all kinds of more problems. They're like, no, you don't know. But I say this all the time, and it's great because it's true. Since our listeners are the smart ones, we don't have to worry about that. Right. So we're gonna crack into this, though. There are some things, though, that still I think people miss. And the first one out there, Matt, what do you mean when you say the index is not the market?
Yeah. So
yeah, first, what are indexes? Help me out here.
Yeah. So an index is basically taking a bunch of different companies, right, and wrapping them up in one shell. So one of the ones that we were going to talk about,
like
today,
a mutual fund.
I mean, in a way, it kind of is, right? I mean, in a roundabout way, like if you want to get down to the most basic terms, it's like, well, the NASDAQ represents these companies, and it'd be a long list, right, to write them all out. But it's like it is the performance of all of those companies kind of lumped together.
Yeah, it's actually, and it's a formula. By the way, you can't actually invest in an index. Like, it's not possible to do. I know Matt's making a face at me right now. You want me to explain why?
Okay.
You can't, because they're theoretical. Indexes have no operating expense. For example, we use the S&P 500 as a proxy for the stock market. But it's assembled with a set of rules, okay? It looks at, it's actually more than 500 companies. It looks at them based on how big they are, but based on market capitalization. And it's a conglomerate or a formula for how you would assemble those roughly 506 stocks, I think it is right now, if you were going to have enough money to buy all of them in the ratios that the formula suggested. The reason that it's not really possible to invest in an index is because, one, it changes and moves all the time. But two, you have a cost to buy everything in the index. So there's a tiny fractional expense to assemble this theoretical index. So you can get really, really close to it, but you're never actually the index. You can buy an index fund, you can buy an ETF, and they track the index, mm-hmm. but they're not exactly the index. And if we're going to get really hyper uppity specific, yeah. that's why.
Yeah.
For our purposes, you can effectively buy so close to the index statistically that we may as well call it the index.
Sure.
But, you know, let's be precise, right?
Yeah.
And there's lots of different versions of the formula. So the NASDAQ formula is different for the NASDAQ broader index versus the NASDAQ 100, which is the 100 biggest stocks. There's the S&P 500. There's the S&P 100. There's the Russell 3000. There's the Wilshire 5000. There's a Russell 2000 value and the Russell 2000 growth. There's a lot of different kinds
right.
of indexes.
And some of the, like the NASDAQ 100 you just mentioned, that's just taking, you know, the index that is the NASDAQ and saying, you know, what are what, the 100 largest companies by market
yeah.
by
capitalization
the way, in there?
Anybody ever wonder what the NASDAQ is?
Like the acronym?
Yeah.
Whoa. I mean, I should know this.
It's okay. It's not a trick question, and not, there's not going to be a test. It's the National Association of Securities Dealers Automated Quotation System.
Look at you.
Okay. And why this matters is the New York Stock Exchange, there's a physical building that you can walk in where those stocks get traded. There's a floor,
mm-hmm.
and then there's brokers on the floor, but there's also electronic systems connected to it.
Have you ever got a chance to go in there?
No, I never Dang. Have. I've just seen pictures.
Is
I've
it on
walked
your bucket
by the
list?
Outside.
You walked by the outside, but you didn't go in?
Well, there's a whole process. It was back during the sort of COVID times, and it was really complicated.
Yeah.
And
never mind.
So we chose, I was with my family, we chose to do other stuff in Manhattan that we thought would be more fun. We walked by the giant bull, by the way.
Oh, that's
the
cool.
anatomically correct giant bull, which mm-hmm. is hilarious. And so we did that kind of stuff. But that's really beside the point. The point here is that the NASDAQ isn't a place. The NASDAQ is an electronic trading platform that links all these different people together to facilitate trading. That's different than a stock exchange like the Chicago Board of Trade or the New York Stock Exchange, where you physically have locations that people assemble at, and then you have computers that give you remote access.
Yeah.
So just kind of a novelty to throw in on the show is like that's another part of this.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so why are indexes not really the market?
Well, so going back to that theory of blind beliefs, right? Someone might have the belief that if the NASDAQ, for example, were to fall 10%, fall 10%, then the entire like tech sector could be falling apart, right?
Yeah.
And we're kind of witnessing this a little bit right now in mm-hmm. the NASDAQ 100. What happened? Well, semiconductors and memory stocks kind of took a nosedive. And so it drug the index down. And so you see these headline articles of like, well, the index is pulling back. And it's like, well, are all the stocks pulling back in that index? Or was it like five of them?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
here's I remember this fun picture. I want to paint a mental picture for everybody, because if I can do this even kind of successfully, it may explain what's going on here. And it has to do with the way averages work. Imagine that you saw a picture and it's a cartoon of a river, okay? And you can see a person standing on one side of the river and they want to cross to the other side. And they see a sign that says average depth 2 feet. And then they see for the first 3 feet, or the first three segments, let's say it's a foot deep. And then there's a 10 foot deep section, and then there's six more segments after that that are 1 foot deep,
mm-hmm.
okay? So what you really had was a sampling of 10, where 9 of them were a 1 and 1 of them was a 10. And if you add them all together, you know, 10 plus, really right. should have been slightly more, it's 19. So it'd be average depth is 1.9 feet. But there's a section that's 10 feet deep. Is it safe to cross?
Right. No.
No, because when you hit that 10-foot section, you're going under. Mm-hmm. And that's the way averages work in indexes sometimes, is you can actually have just one section of the index that's not healthy, and it can drag everything else down because of the way averages work.
Yeah. It was wild when I was sitting there at my computer a few days ago, and I was seeing all this green on the screen. It's like green, 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 green. And there's
like
a couple companies that were red.
Just a handful of things that are like super red.
And then the index was red, and I'm like, whoa, you know? And it stops you for a second where you see, you know, 4 or 5% gains on all these different companies, and the index is down. And then you look at it, and it's like, oh, well, NVIDIA's down 3 or 4%. And then it starts, oh, well, the NVIDIA was the largest company in the world there for a second, and then it fell, what, 6-7% off of its peak. And no, then
my kids are gonna freak out if you say 6-7. You can't do that.
I had to do it for you. They're listening somewhere, like they're doing the hand motion. But then Apple jumped and regained its dominance as the largest, so they're kind of oscillating right now.
Well, who's gonna be the biggest company in the world? It's kind of like, you know, is Elon Musk gonna be a trillionaire or not, depending on where SpaceX is.
Now he's not.
He was, but now he's not,
right? Because
fascinating,
it fell so
right
much. Yeah,
I mean, relevant also. So there's kind of an academic component to this that I think is really interesting. Bigger picture thing for all investors. And I'm trying to, well, let's do this. Let's take our first break. It's time. We can do that. We're going to take our first break. This is something that is going to test investment theories. It has to do with the indexes, and it's going to be a big test of some theories. Let's talk about it when we come back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, where if you were just joining us, we got the live stream on YouTube, and this will also be available via podcast tomorrow. You can go to littlejohnfs.com and look under the, what is it, the resource tab. There's something like that, but we the knowledge center.
The Dave's Amazing tab.
We don't have that tab for good reason.
When?
But anyway, it's available there. But you can also subscribe to the YouTube channel and you get notification when we go live, and you can check these out later. So, Matt, I have a question for you. It's sort of academic. It's a little bit wonky, but I think it's super relevant for anybody that's an investor right now.
Yeah.
Even if you're like, no, I just have a 401k plan, or I'm working and I've got PERS or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The question is, will indexes continue to be a good proxy for the market?
I'll just go out on a limb and say, sure, under the premise that I do think it's going to get super tech weighted, right? And I think that's going to continue to kind of dominate the space. But I'm going to look at where our earnings and revenue really coming from, and how are people making money? Well, if if AI does manage to eat some of the jobs that it's projected to eat, you could see companies continue to shift to a more, tech-based platform. And so it's like, well, what is the market in the future? What if the market is just technology? Like, what if you see like your standard, run-of-the-mill companies kind of disappear and all that's left is tech?
Matt saw me like sort of light up and smile as soon as he said that. You hit the crux of the question. What is the market?
Mm-hmm. The market. It's wherever the money is.
So
where the corporate earnings are. That's where the market is.
Well, that's one of the reasons that it's difficult to outperform something like the S&P 500 on a long-term basis, is it biases to
whatever's
the biggest
winning
companies that are getting bigger.
Yeah.
But not only that, you now have all of these institutions that invest automatically into these indexes. And so if you're on that list, then that means that all of the new money flow from people that are putting money into their retirement plans sort of automatically shows up.
Well,
and in an auction, right, if there's more buyers than sellers, the price goes up.
Well, and
that's
what we
just
did.
Call a bid.
Yeah.
We're putting a bid in the market.
You're right. Where the money is moving inside the market kind of dictates some of that. And look at like what the Treasury just did with all of these Trump accounts for kids, right? All these kids getting $1,000 a piece, where is it going? The SPYM, it's going into the a version of the S&P 500, right? And so
there you go.
Yeah. And you're not wrong to make that point.
All of this that's interesting is, what is the market? Well, it may not be a diversified snapshot in the future.
Which I don't even think it is now.
I agree. While it owns a lot of things, I think that it's got some real concentration bias.
Think about this. We just watched literally memory and
semiconductors,
just two subsectors, moved the entire market lower when virtually the rest of the market was going up. So I'm like, you can already, I think, make the case that it's way over biased in one direction.
Mm-hmm.
Two subsectors moved the entire market lower when the rest of the market virtually was going up.
Well, this is why the concept of what is the market? And that you know, and as investors, it's like, hey, look, I'm more concerned about what is it that you own. This, I think, is relevant for some of the rest of the conversation that we want to build today around
rules. I do,
rules.
Too, because how many times have you seen someone that's, I mean, they're not even as diversified as an index. They pick a handful of, I've seen it, a portfolio mm-hmm. with three positions in it. Mm-hmm. Or less. I've seen him with one position.
I've seen Jim Cramer play the game of am I diversified with a five-position portfolio. And I just think,
you know what's
wow.
crazy, though? Like, do you think, this is just a random question, if you really put your heart and soul into it, could you make a five-position portfolio more diversified than an index? Like the NASDAQ 100? See where I'm going with that?
Yeah.
Like,
so
if
I mean,
you
could make it academically, like sector-wise, right? I think you could.
Yeah.
I think that the problem is that you do not have enough diversification to mitigate non-system risk. Okay.
What we call
idiosyncratic risk. It's a
sure.
fancy term, right?
Mm-hmm.
But idiosyncratic risk, you know, to the layman, because remember, if I make the words complicated, they cost more, right? So let's call it idiosyncratic risk, and then we can charge a lot. But if I tell you what it means, it just means, hey, it's the individual or unique risks of each company. So what happens, I've used this example, I don't know how many times on the show, but Home Depot, their CEO dies in a plane crash.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's Home Depot's problem. That's not the stock market's problem.
Right.
And so you do still bear a concentration risk that something could go wrong with your single holding. You're very concentrated, even though you have five positions. You know, you could make, I could probably rattle off a five-position portfolio right now that's pretty broadly diversified. Different sectors, they don't overlap a lot. They have very low correlation
right.
to each other. That's, you know, they have adequate liquidity for trading. Like, I could probably create that. I'm pulling it out of my hip pocket.
Yeah.
The problem is that doesn't make it safe.
Correct.
And even that, air quotes around safe, that is so concentrated that the problem is if you miss even one.
Right. One company
right,
goes
one company
completely
can be,
under.
Can completely cannibalize the returns of the entire strategy.
Yeah. But so, we know people that are one position people
yeah.
or five position people.
I know people that just have like a savings account and gold stashed away.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait a second. So other than the physical assets that you own, like your car, your house, that
yeah.
kind of stuff, you're not, that's, there's no diversification at all.
Yeah.
You know, and okay. I mean, it happens.
It works when it works until it doesn't. And that's the problem. Like, what if it doesn't work? Because how many people would have thought back in what, 19... When did AT&T crest out at the number one, like, largest position
I
in
don't
the S&P?
Remember.
You know what I
yeah.
mean? But, like, someone, I bet you someone or maybe
how about
a handful
this?
Of people
Elon
put—
Elon Musk, okay? Elon Musk was PayPal into Tesla into SpaceX. Everything else is privately held.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, huh. Well, if I put 100% of my eggs in those baskets in that sequence, that worked out pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, now he's done a bunch of other things because they are his companies, but he took companies that went public and now they're publicly owned companies and he just happens to be majority shares holder.
But timing's a lot of it too. What if you would have
put,
you know, 20% of your money in PayPal 2 years ago before it dropped 50% or whatever
sure,
it was, or
sure.
you put in, you know, we saw the report of that guy that put all his money in SpaceX, and now it's 20% below its IPO. And so it's like, gosh, people are really gutsy.
Somebody uses, I know what it means, but not because I'm cool. I know what it means because I have kids. When people said, folks that ran out to buy SpaceX got thirsty.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what?
Yeah.
And then I had to go, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
I'm aging out for sure, but it was a thirst trap.
It
right?
was.
I just, you know, I got baited into it. I had to be there, had to be
part
of it.
Well, you didn't.
I did not.
Go back and watch the show stuff. I mean, there was some warnings on that one.
Yeah,
and it actually has kind of played out just like we said it would.
Yeah. I was really concerned. It's getting much more into valuation levels that you say this is still risky, but at least the numbers you think maybe it could grow over the next 3, 4, 5 years, get some government mm-hmm. contracts and get some cash flow moving, that those valuations could ultimately make sense. But early on, I'm like, this thing was priced beyond perfection.
Mm-hmm.
And with the benefit of hindsight, it's easy to say that.
Well,
it's just kind of interesting because we kind of did, we said it, right?
Well,
and we didn't say it as a recommendation. I just said, I'm not going to touch it because it just seems radioactive right now and I can't value it.
Didn't its valuation grow past being like the value of Amazon or something?
Oh, no, that was huge. It was huge.
And I'm like,
maybe
what?
It was past Amazon.
Yeah.
But I know that
it was 2-point-something trillion at one point.
It was a multi-trillion dollar company in the first week.
That's mind-blowing.
And you just thought, what? And you know, if you went out and bought it, you're probably kicking yourself.
I don't even think we've had our first earnings report. I think that's here in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
well,
we don't know how.
It's kind of like this black box. What do you earn? How much do you make? You know, what do sales look like?
It was really built around. It's.
And then people were like, we don't care. Buy it.
I say this about Tesla now. I've been on air before saying I don't know how to value Tesla and it looks expensive. The thing is, I'm not sure what Tesla does. I know things Tesla does, but I don't know what Tesla is going to be when it grows up.
Right.
Tesla
it's
was.
Like, is it a car company? Is it a robotics company? Is
well,
it a
that's
solar
the pivot.
Company?
First, it was a car company.
Yeah.
Then it became a battery company.
Mm-hmm.
Then it became a solar company. Then it became a battery company again. Then it became a car company again. And then it became a robot company.
Hey, maybe that's how you make a bunch of money. Just always confuse people. How do
well, I mean, it's I don't want to turn this into a trash Elon Musk. That's not what's going on because I think there's still amazing things that you go like, well, look at the product. It's pretty incredible. So this is not trashing one way or the other, but it is saying it's very hard as an investor to know what you're investing in when you keep changing the story.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that history, it's like I'm a little cautious here because – you know, you have SpaceX merged with XAI. And I'm like, wait a second here. So Grok.
Did you hear what they're doing with the banking thing, by the way?
No. With what?
With the banking. X is adding banking.
Well, that's been on Elon's for years. I mean, I read his biography.
I guess
that was
like,
written like 10, you know, years ago. And
yeah.
That was something he was talking about since his PayPal days. He originally wanted PayPal. He wanted it to be named X, and he wanted it to be that back then. So. All of these things have been sort of linked together for years. In the same way, the case that, well, Tesla making robots, electric vehicles, and batteries, and the Boring Company makes tunnels. It's like, well, that's all the stuff you need to colonize Mars. Like, that really does connect together. You need the AI systems. You need the robotics. You need the battery and power storage. You need power generation. And you're going to be subterranean because there's no atmosphere on Mars. So you're going to have to build stuff underground in order to transport things around, and you know you can set up bubbles and domes, but you're gonna have a lot of underground boring that's needed.
Do you think that he's wild enough that that's actually just his play?
Well, I think that is probably his play. The question is, does he realistically think it's gonna get there in his lifetime, or is he just making incremental steps that way, and he's making profits?
So, what would be the driving force? Like, why would you work 18 hours a day, 7 days a week, to just put people on another planet?
So,
do you have a theory for that? Because I've asked myself that before.
It's an
like,
unsatisfying theory, but I do.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to try to say this with diplomacy because I don't want, you know, people to snap at me for this and say I'm not being sensitive or whatever. I think that he is on the spectrum somewhere, and that's just kind of driven into his DNA. And I think when you hear his backstory and some of the things that he was surrounded with, there was a lot of, he described in his biography, there were elements that were pretty abusive in his backstory. And so the commentary is that he's all signal and no noise.
So do you think he's like trying to make a world that he can control and it's his own little
perfection? I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of that much psychology. I don't think that's what it is. Okay. I think it's more the idea that he became ultra focused on goals because those were things that made sense to him. People don't make a whole lot of sense. And so they tend to be more like utilities in his plan than relationships. And so if you have a person that really wants to accomplish a mission and doesn't see people as a relationship with value, but instead sees them as, well, like relationships are useful if I can keep you engaged on my project. But otherwise, you know, I can kind of run through different, you know, how many kids does he have with different women? It's like, well, you know, that tells you something about how he bonds with people, in my opinion, right? There you go. It's not super popular, but it's like, yeah, he's probably a little bit on the spectrum. He's got crazy amounts of resources. He's radically focused on what he wants to do, and he doesn't really care if he hurts people's feelings. There you go.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, yeah, I don't know how we got off on that rabbit trail, but welcome to the True Wealth Show. We do this sometimes. Let's do this. Let's regroup. Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll regroup. Right. And when we do, we'll actually talk about what we intended to talk about. Maybe. Okay. Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
We're not... Stop it. Stop it. Welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with...
The guy that keeps running him off the road.
We are... Yeah, Matt, thank you for...
You're welcome.
I don't even know. We're... If you catch the
raw
podcast, it's probably clipped, actually. If you go watch the video,
I'm just asking
the
Emma
segments
right now,
in between
don't clip
might
that.
Be the gold this time.
Yeah, don't clip the edits out.
He's all like, you know what we need to do? We got a sci-fi movie on the making here, and it's gonna go viral. So
yeah, if you want to hear my thoughts on Elon Musk, call the office at 541-375-0898, and I'll give you one to wrap your brain around.
Okay, this is the Matthew sagas. Will they to be continued? Meanwhile, let's try to kind of hook this back in for all of our listeners that might want to figure out if this can help them at all as investors.
Okay.
So we talked about how indexes have become concentrated in some sectors, and that concentration can actually become a source of volatility. So
it can.
This, by the way, academically is one of the challenges is sometimes an investor may believe that they're diversified, but they're not very effectively diversified. And our example of the concentration in the index is in an index. I shouldn't say the index because not all indexes behave the same way. In this case, we were talking about the NASDAQ.
Right.
S&P 500 has been similar.
Like the
though.
Dow, very different.
The Dow
results.
Has not suffered the same way.
No.
It's more broadly and evenly weighted across sectors. So it didn't have the same concentration bias. So let's talk for just a moment about the concept of diversification. I've given this lecture before so much that I named it. I call it Mind Your Shuns.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Diversification, correlation, allocation. This is a three-legged stool. All of them need to be part of this or it doesn't really hold itself up. Okay.
Yeah.
So first, what's diversification?
I mean, we kind of touched on that one earlier where it's just like you have assets that don't all walk and talk the same at the same time.
Yeah, it's putting your eggs not in one basket, right? You don't just own a single position, you own a bunch of positions. But We just talked about how if you own a bunch of positions that are all in the same industry or sector, you're not terribly diversified from a marketing or market perspective, not marketing, but a market perspective.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have two other legs of the stool. We have allocation and correlation.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about allocation next.
Okay.
What does that mean?
I mean, where you're allocating your money is like where you're putting
it's the categories, right? Are you going into stocks or bonds? Are you going into international? Are you going into big companies, small companies? Are you making, are you diversified across sectors? It's where are the areas that you're investing in or the categories?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you've got the individual positions. You can be diversified there, but we need to also try to be diversified properly for the amount of risk you're willing to take through allocation process. What about correlation? This to me is the one that's really important, and it's talked about in the professional circles, but just not in the retail circles.
Well, I bought Exxon, Chevron, and ConocoPhillips and XLE, so I'm in energy alone.
Yeah. So what have you just described for
concentration?
Concentration.
Yep.
And correlation means everything's related to itself.
Yep.
Right? Well, sometimes we use this correlation concept. Maybe you've heard causation and correlation aren't the same thing. That's the idea that we sometimes get data and we say, well, when this thing happens, we see this other thing happen at the same time. Does that mean that, here's a real life example. If people don't sleep enough, then we see more car accidents.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's an example of a correlation between the amount of sleep and car accidents. And interestingly enough, causation as well. That, well, the lack of sleep, we know medically, can slow your reaction time and so forth, and so that can cause more accidents. Those are actually the same thing. But you can have two events that appear to be correlated, and these are weird things. Like, whoever wins the Super Bowl determines whether or not the S&P 500 index will be positive for the next year. Well, there's actually a fair amount of correlation to that index, so much so that it exists. But do we really believe that the winner of the Super Bowl affects all of the earnings of all the different companies and influences everybody for the rest of the year as to which positions they buy or don't buy?
No.
It's probably not causation, but the correlation exists. Well, why am I beating this drum so much? We've used the example of if you buy Home Depot and Lowe's, you are technically diversified amongst two companies, but they're highly correlated to each other,
mm-hmm.
really similar businesses.
Yeah.
And so you can either have direct correlation, one step together. You can have inverse correlation, one go one step one direction, the other goes a step the opposite direction. Or you can have low correlation, which means one of them steps and the other one may or may not step. And that's what you're really looking for. The whole idea, when we talked about five-position portfolio,
mm-hmm.
the concentration's a problem. Because
right.
even if you're diversified, and even if you're low correlation, you're still not well diversified from a market risk. But if you have 25 or so positions, and you start looking at what that means, if you have 25 low correlation positions, your standard deviation or the variability of your investment mix is statistically almost the same, not technically the same, but almost the same as if you owned 1,000 positions.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. So you can get more and more and more diversified, but you don't necessarily become lower and lower risk beyond a point because mathematically, you really have diversified a lot of the risk out of your portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
And
that makes sense.
So this is now diversified the idiosyncratic risk. Remember we talked about that because I can't help you if we have a world war, all the markets get affected, right? That's not something that diversification helps. Everything gets hit. And so one of them is the idea that the tide rises and falls and all the boats go up and down with the tide.
Yeah.
That's the whole system.
So what's kind of inside of that wrapper that you just described? You know, we've been hitting on these ideas of different blind beliefs, things that people kind of blindly believe.
Of them is that the index, they're diversified.
Okay.
And they are mathematically owning a lot of positions. They're diversified.
Mm-hmm.
But they may still have a lot of sector concentration. And it appears that that concentration has been increasing over the last several years as the AI trade has ballooned a handful of really large players. They're now referred to, we've named them, by the way, we've named them hyperscalers.
Yeah.
And so these companies like Apple and NVIDIA that have become super, super huge.
Right.
And those hyperscale companies have become disproportionately large within the weighting of their respective indexes.
Yeah.
So
they have gotten really, really big. And I think that, you know, one of the segments we were going to kind of talk about today was like, this belief that people have that the biggest winners, that in the companies that are kind of creating the technology, they're going to be the ones that capture all the profits.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you brought up this theory of like, well, yeah, like they can, but where are they going to get all their energy from? Right. And that was a really valid point that you were talking about. It's like, yeah, there can be some big winners, but they might not be the obvious ones.
Yeah. And it's interesting because this is a form of analysis that's a little bit difficult because it involves thinking several chess moves
down the line.
So, well, I mean, maybe we just take the break here. We come back and we talk about this idea of how do we do?
How do we identify this? How do we
stick around? We want to talk about thesis-based investing, or maybe a better way to put it is, what could go wrong?
Sure. There we go. I like it.
Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the home stretch of the True Wealth Radio Show. Matthew.
Yes.
I feel like when I use your full name like that, you're about to get in trouble.
Oh, boy.
That or you're about to get some kind of weighted question.
I'm ready for the heavy question of the day.
Well, you know, when we sort of left off, we were talking about the concentration, the way we build portfolios, and then we I gotta actually remember, what were we gonna talk about?
We were gonna talk about how some of the big winners might not always be the obvious ones, because right now, and this is how I feel the market went, everyone just honed in on semiconductors, chips, mm-hmm. chips, and when they heard of AI, it's like, well, chips, and then the conversation ended there. Well, where are the chips going? What infrastructure are they building?
Okay, how are it's the thesis-based investing thing.
Yeah. So
I really need to carry in a notepad. I'm starting to lose
it. Here, do you want my pen? I got
technically,
you.
But I have to like write it on my hand.
Can I write it on your forehead?
Whew,
semiconductors.
You can see it, but I can't.
Semiconductors.
Yeah. So we've
why might
about
that
this.
Not be the obvious path?
Well, so here was where this started. You asked the question, what would need to be true for these numbers to make sense?
And for the market to just keep cooking with the same temperature?
Sort of. I mean, yeah. I looked at some of these companies and I look at the earnings expectations. And one of the ways that you can do this is you can look at the price to earnings ratio. So you say, well, how much is the company actually earning? How much stock is in existence? And then you divide the amount of stock by the amount of earnings, and you get a ratio.
We've heard of PE a lot on this show. We don't typically talk about forward PE, though, and that was something that you were diving into today. Yeah. Do you want to talk about how that might be a little bit different?
Well, forward PE is the guidance that the company is issuing. These are the expected profits. Mm-hmm. So based on profit expectations and projection of profits, this is where the PE would be today.
So say a company has a current PE ratio of 20, but a forward PE of 16.
Then you're actually expecting that the company could continue to grow a little bit if you expect the PE to remain at about 20.
Mm-hmm.
Strangely enough, right?
Right?
What you're saying is the future PE is actually lower because if we include the growth
because
that we expect, it's not as expensive.
The price is stagnant, kind of, in that equation, but the earnings go up. So the ratio is lower.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
And so, but what happens in actuality is now let's say the projection is for 90 days later, for the next quarter.
Okay.
And as the company continues to engage in business, an analyst continue to assess whether or not the company is likely to hit those earnings. And they do that by looking at contracts and the performance of other companies and where their earnings are showing up and so forth to get an idea whether or not the company is going to be right on their projection. If they expect the company to be right on the projection and the market thinks that the value was proper when it was a 20 PE ratio with the last one, then you would expect the price to start climbing.
Exactly.
For the ratios to sort of equalize to what the former ratio had been.
Correct.
So now the opposite would occur if forward PE was higher than present PE. Mm. Then you actually say, that's a problem. We think this is overvalued and it's probably going to have to come down some.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of the ways that you can establish guidance. And by the way, just because those numbers are out of alignment doesn't make them, that does not compel an investor's behavior.
Correct.
It just informs it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then the investor is going to make the decision that they're going to make. And so supply and demand will ultimately drive the price of the stock. But that's one way to get a sense of the leanings of the marketplace, is how the forward earnings are compared to present. So let's suppose that you have much lower forward earnings, then there's an expectation of really high profits.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if that's the case, then you have to say, well, what does the company need to do for those profits to be possible? And the game that Matt and I were playing is it really possible for some of these companies to hit their targets? And the question is, well, maybe yes, but is it possible for them to do it with the techniques that we know?
Or with the amount of energy per se that,
well, that's, yeah, yeah, and I'm headed to that path, because there could just be creative financing where they conjure profits somehow. I mean, these companies all seem to be doing deals with each other. So it's a little hard to say, like, well, I had a big contract with you, and next quarter you have a big contract with me. Are we just trading the money back and forth?
Right.
You know, we're just trading credit with each other. That's some accounting stuff that you got to get into the layers, into the weeds to figure that out. But I think a simple way to look at this is, how much power does it take to produce the amount of computational need that these companies say that they're going to be pushing?
This was an interesting quote here. So during a gold rush, the biggest winner isn't always the person searching for the gold. Sometimes it's the person solving the problem every gold miner has, right? So, like, are you the one with the store that is selling the picks and the shovels and the sluice box? Like, are you the one that's selling the stuff to the gold person going to find the gold? You don't necessarily have to be the one that pulls it out of the ground in order to make profits.
Yeah, you could sell pickaxes
and
do really well, and nobody ever gets gold.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the issue right now. Let me just summarize this for our listeners without this being investment advice of any kind, but just a really interesting moment for the AI boom that we're in. Unless we come up with a way to get a lot more efficient processors in the marketplace that require a lot less energy, it doesn't look like there's an adequate source of power to actually do all of the AI computing that is supposed to replace all the jobs out there.
Mm-hmm.
And there are second order effects to this as well. There may not be adequate water to cool all of the data centers that are being allegedly created for this. So there are some physical impediments to making this happen right now. Doesn't mean they're not solvable, but with the known technology and the known production capacity and the backlog from all of the different subcontractors and suppliers needed to create power for all these places, it's questionable as to whether or not the companies can deliver on the promise of this massive AI computing.
Right.
And so that's the concern that analysts are starting to tiptoe around, is we've made some really huge promises and the market is really expecting these promises to be delivered upon.
I think that might be why we've seen some of the sell-off that we've seen, right? We haven't really seen it fully on an index level, but...
Well, and isn't it interesting it was the chips first?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Wait a second. Why would we be buying all these chips if we can't put them into service?
Right? And so the first thing to boom is now kind of the first thing, it seems like, to kind of sell off.
And it has sold off. We've seen chip suppliers anywhere from 20 to 50% off of their peak values.
It's, okay?
I'm not naming names, but they're out there.
Sure. So yeah. It's just raising questions, and I think it's smart for investors to be aware of the trends that are going on because, like you said, if the index can pull back off of just one subsector.
Well, and here's the other thing. I've heard it said many times. Markets can remain irrational longer than you can remain solvent.
Yeah.
This thing could keep going longer than we expect.
Yeah, because we've gotten used to these little flash crashes. Oh, the market's down 20% for 3 months. Oh, it's back.
We've gotten kind of comfortable,
haven't we?
Well, there's strange things. Like, we haven't seen the whole market at large have corrections, but we've seen the corrections roll through sectors at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So pieces of the market pull back when other pieces stay higher. And so that's really interesting that we're not seeing this sort of broad market pullbacks. I think the last really broad market pullback we experienced was probably in 22.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't know. I'm certainly not asking for it to happen.
Right.
And I'm not, you know, running through the streets saying the British are coming. I'm not saying it's inevitable. But I think we need to be aware that markets don't die because of old age, but they can, you know, or they say bull markets don't die of old age, but something typically kills them. So just be aware.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Okay. So if there's an investor that's listening to this and they're like, you know, Dave, Matt, I've been listening to you guys for far too long. Can we actually get the ball rolling on figuring this stuff out for me? How do they get a hold of us? What do they do?
Yeah, they can give us a call, 541-375-0898. You can also email to info@littlejohnfs.com. You could text that number I just gave you. There are all different ways to reach us, and we would be happy to sit down and do a free consult, and we can get the ball rolling or not, but we can certainly get you more information. Side note and a reminder, mark your calendars, gang. On August 20th, we're going to be doing a workshop at our office around will and estate planning. So if you got questions about whether or not you should be putting a will in place or an estate plan, you need to get a trust, need updates, that's also on the calendar. So that's coming up August 20th. So.
I like it.
All right. Well, I can see that we're out of time for now. So just the last reminder for everybody, the number again, 541-375-0898. Matthew, anything else for the go to the order?
No. Give us a call.
We'll help you out.
All right.
And then until next time, I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.